You're tuning in to the Raised by Rentals program. This podcast will contain strong language and spoilers for decades-old media properties. Join us.
Welcome, everybody. This is the podcast where we examine pop culture franchises of the VHS era and improv new stories subliminally planted in our brains by clandestine reptilian overlords to distract from the real problems of the world with whimsy and fake news. And oh yeah, to imagine how we might improve our favorite movies, TV, and games. I'm Josh.
I'm Mike.
And we were raised by rentals. Mike, it's our 67th episode. Woo-hoo! Which doesn't mean anything, so big whoop, right?
your openings frequently get me, but that one definitely got me. I had to purse my lips for a moment because I almost started laughing.
Well, good, because I spent a lot of time working on that for like one sentence.
kudos.
Oh, man.
Oh, shit.
So I was going to say, yeah, like, big fucking whoop. It's the 67th episode. Why should I care? Why care about anything? I didn't even prepare for the episode today. I have no fucking idea what to do for a story today. We picked a topic and I said, sure. So I think this should be pretty fun. But I don't think there's any reason to bury the lead. I think we should just kind of jump right into it because I know you said you had this like bolt of an idea. And I didn't have anything. I was like, fuck it. Like, we did the Flapjack Massacre. We did Hot Garbage. We did the Vengabus of Death. We did Yule Parish with Jürgen the Yuletide Avenger. We can fucking do anything. I'm just going to show up completely unprepared and tell a fucking story and you'll be entertained.
I mean, you know, that's not inaccurate.
I got my fucking cock up over like our improv, you know, abilities, especially we had Michael LeMay on our last episode on the Flapjack Massacre episode, you know, telling us, you know, how much he's a fan of the show. And, you know, I was like, oh, shucks, and I'm blushing half the time. But at the same time, I'm like, yeah, you know, he's right. He's right. We're pretty good.
Yeah, we know what we're doing. Yeah, we're good.
So I was like, so I got real fucking cocky. It was like, I'm just going to show up completely unprepared. And then like about an hour ago, I'm like, fuck, look up trivia, look up facts, have things at my fingertips. Shit, I need something.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and especially because the topic at hand, like we are improving, you know, a known topic, but it's one of those things of like, how the hell do you give a story to this? Because, you know, as anyone who read the title, it's Pac-Man. How the fuck do we make a movie about Pac-Man?
Yeah, and I think that's the challenge for today. We were talking in our year in rear view wrap-up to season 2 at the end of December about, you know, facts and figures about the show. And we were both surprised that, measured by downloads, the least popular improv that we did last season was our Centipede episode. Mm-hmm. And I was surprised by that because I really thought that was a fun episode and it was like an interesting concept that people would want to tune in for, like Centipede the arcade game and make a story out of that.
Right. And I was still really happy with what we came out with. Like, I thought it was a very fun, you know, very 80s sci-fi movie. Lots of gooey splatter effects, you know, that we discussed with I think it was the spider acid or one of the creatures was like spitting acid on dudes.
It was cool. Like, we had a big giant monster. We had like cool like sci-fi shit. You know, we sent like a crack team in, you know, to fight against like, you know, weird alien monsters. Like, and I learned a lot about the video game, which is apparently it's about like actual insects in like a garden. I thought this was like Space Invaders with like a giant like space centipede. I didn't realize it was about like, you know, little tiny creatures.
I totally did too. I thought it was giants. I was like, oh yeah, it's clear, like, clearly you're some kind of like vehicle in the game because you're shooting. So yeah. I didn't think it was bugs.
No, it's like you're like some kind of miniature creature. But anyway, I thought it was a ton of fun. And when we were brainstorming ideas for that episode, we put down a bunch of other arcade games on a list of like, well, what else could we do besides Centipede? Like, is there something else that doesn't have much of a story or hasn't really been adapted very much? And Pac-Man went on the list because obviously it's like the most popular arcade game like ever, right? Mm-hmm. but then for the longest time, I was like, I don't know if I want to do Pac-Man. I feel like there's a couple of things that were kind of putting me off. One of them was I just immediately think of, well, Pac-Man is like a creature that eats things. So Pac-Man's a big monster, but like, okay, I don't know if there's a story there, or plus I've seen other people kind of make that joke when parodying Pac-Man. And there's two cartoons already that have come up with a story for Pac-Man. There was a cartoon in the 80s and then again in 2013. So it's like clearly somebody else decided to put some kind of a story structure around what is essentially a storyless game, like most arcade games from the early 80s. But as we were looking at that list, like looking for ideas for the season, it was like, okay, let's go back to some of those old ideas and do something with them. Let's dust them off. Let's look at these old arcade games. And we just decided, fuck it, let's just do Pac-Man. Why not? And then I never really thought about it at all until like, again, like an hour ago. And I'm like, I don't know anything about Pac-Man. When did it even fucking come out? Like, who made it? Like, I don't know shit.
Well, I did the same thing last night because I had the seeds of an idea, but I wanted to look up a bunch of stuff. I had no clue about like the fact that it was only made by 9 people, which is kind of interesting. A lot of those old games are usually made by a very small team. But I didn't know that it came out in 1980. For some reason, I thought it was a 1970s game. I really did. I thought it was the late 70s.
I did, but, too.
It came out in 1980. And you know, we had the cartoon was 82 to 83. And I vividly remember watching that as a kid. And I'm like, I know I wasn't watching that shit at 2 years old. So I must have been watching it in syndication or something. Because I remember seeing it a lot on Saturday mornings. Like, it was one of those, the early morning cartoons. Like, you know how the good shit would start around 8 a.m.? And then there was, like, all the crappy shit from, like, 5 a.m. to, like, to 8. And I feel like that was somewhere in that mix of shows. But I used to watch them. But yeah, like I didn't really know much about Pac-Man, and other than just playing the, you know, the original game and Miss Pac-Man, like I never really fucked around with any of the reboots or remakes or revamps or whatever. It never was something that was super appealing to me. Like it's weird. As pop culture significance, Pac-Man and the ghosts are fun images. They're fun images to see. Like I do enjoy the look of them. But they're not important to me the way so many other pop culture things are. So Pac-Man was really off my radar. So when we decided to do this, it was like, fuck, what do we do with it?
Everything you just said was true for me also. Like, yeah, I remember watching the cartoon. I don't remember being especially interested in it. I've never had any special interest in Pac-Man, like any nostalgic connection to him. He's a cool character from pop culture, but I never looked into it. I didn't really know any trivia. Didn't really know anything about the game. I know there's a Ms. Pac-Man and a Junior Pac-Man spinoff. And like I said, I knew about the cartoons. Hell, my wife has a Pac-Man tattoo, but she got that kind of on a whim, you know? So it was actually interesting looking up some of the facts and figures, you know, in the last hour or so. Like, you know, again, there was the cartoons and the spinoff games, and I learned a little bit more about, you know, the guy who led the team to created the game, Toru Iwatani. And, you know, I knew what a lot of people know, which is like the trivia from Scott Pilgrim versus the World, where the character was originally called something along the lines of Puckman. But when they exported it to America and, you know, English speaking countries, like you couldn't have a video game console with the word Puck on it, P-U-C-K, because people would vandalize it, you know, and and it would kind of ruin like the family friendly atmosphere of the arcade console.
Because suddenly it became Fuckman.
Exactly. Fuck that guy. But yeah, in the interest of puffing out my chest and being real confident about our improv skills, I was like, ah, fuck it, let's just do Pac-Man. But I was really glad that when you woke up today, you were like, cool, I had this idea. And I'm like, oh, thank God.
Do you know how many times that's happened on this show where one of us is like, all right, I know we can do this. And the other one is like, oh, no, I got a cool idea. And they're like, oh, thank God. Because you've done that to me before where I'm like, I don't know what the fuck we're going to do. And you're like, well, I have this seed of an idea. And I'm just like, sweet Jesus, thank you. Because I was lost.
Exactly. We need something to, like, you know, hang something on. I got to put my hooks in something somewhere. I need, just need a little finger hold, you know, to stretch the metaphor. Exactly. But yeah. not to belabor the point any longer, so we're going to do a movie, as we typically do, like a movie story about how to adapt Pac-Man into a movie. And I think doing something sci-fi or horror, like genre, is the right approach, right?
Oh, absolutely.
And I will just want to say right now that I have never seen the 2015 movie Pixels, so I have no clue what they do with Pac-Man in that movie other than what I saw in the trailer, which is that there's like a giant 8-bit pixelated alien or hologram or something that like starts eating buildings. That's all I know. So I'm not taking anything from whatever they did in Pixels.
I have not seen it all the way through. I saw parts of it because Caleb and Jess were watching it, and I saw parts of it when they were watching it. I don't remember that scene, so my only understanding of that from the movie is from what I saw in the trailer as well. The parts I did see of the movie were actually kind of cute and funny. I'm like, okay, you know, I for like a younger, you know, younger comedy, it seemed pretty solid, and Caleb really liked it. So I'm like, eh, maybe one day I'll watch it, but probably not, just because time is limited, and you know, I got to watch all these old movies for podcasts. Damn it.
Exactly. Gotta focus.
Which, total side note, I gotta bring this up because I gotta tell somebody about it. Do you know what fucking movie I watched the other night? Like, I've been on an 80s comedy kick lately where I keep finding really old comedies that I haven't watched in years. Like, I watched The Great Outdoors the other night just because, like, I haven't seen it in probably 20 years.
I love that movie.
But yeah, me too. Like, and I forgot how much of, like, it almost feels like SNL in the sense of, like, It's set up like little vignettes. Like, it's like, oh, mm-hmm. Now we're going to do the scene where we're doing the storytelling about the bear. And now we're going to do the scene where we go see the old man on his 109th birthday. You know, like, mm-hmm. that. It's very like, disconnected scenes. But the movie, I just got to bring this up. I tracked down and found, do you remember Hamburger the Motion Picture?
No. What is that? I don't remember this. I got to Google it.
Dude, it is such a bad movie. Like, it is one of those weird, like, it's like a ski school type of comedy where it's lots of dirty jokes and just like a bunch of misfits. You know, they gotta reach this task. It's the formula of like every 1980s comedy where it's like you have your group of misfits, they encounter a problem, the misfits join something to overcome their problem, and then have to prove to the people that they joined that they're worthy. You know, it's like Police Academy, it's Porky's, it's all of that. But yeah, it's this dude who can't stop having enough sex, like he keeps having too much sex, so he flunks out of like every fucking school he goes to, so he ends up going to the Hamburger College. Dude, it's so fucking dumb, but the whole time I was watching, I was like, this is the type of filmmaking in the 80s. And I bring that up because if we're going to do a Pac-Man movie, I want it to take place in the 1980s, because the 1980s didn't give a fuck about your source material. Yeah. It was a bunch of dudes in a writing room. You got the one money guy ready to throw some money at it. They all just snort a fucking line of coke and just start screaming about what ideas should be in the film. I'm convinced that was Hollywood in the 1980s. Oh, yeah. So I'm like, if Pac-Man was popular in 1980, like from 80 to 83, let's say, because that was when the cartoon and the merchandise and all that stuff was out. Let's fast forward to like 1985, 86, where Pac-Mania has kind of died down. But, you know, Hollywood is now going to try to cash in. So what would they do? Like, you know, I think of stuff like Masters of the Universe, where mm-hmm. this was like the most popular kids toy line and TV show at the time. Like, it was just, they were raking the money in. And then they decided to release this film that had little to nothing to do with the cartoon or toy line. And it failed abysmally, unfortunately. I mean, I loved it as a kid. I know a lot of other people our age loved it. But watching it through adult eyes, it's like, yeah, it has nothing to do with the property that I loved. It's a fun movie, but it's not He-Man. So I feel like that would happen with Pac-Man. Like, how do you take a weird little yellow face that eats dots and ghosts and tell a story about that? So you know, again, to coke-fueled insanity in the 1980s, I feel like they would have made some kind of either a crazy sci-fi about it, or they would have made some kind of crazy comedy. And I much prefer doing crazy sci-fi because comedy is a little harder to improv.
Yeah, and that reminds me of movies like the Super Mario Brothers movie we talked about in one of our episodes, where they took this popular franchise and just said, like, fuck it, kids are stupid, who cares? And they make this, like, bizarre sci-fi movie. And it wasn't bad. I mean, it was
no.
I mean, we both rediscovered it and enjoyed it. But it was just like, what the fuck? Like, it's so weird and different from the source material. It just does its own thing. It's almost like it was just, like, you know, taking names and ideas and, you know, sort of like mixing up the puzzle pieces from the original concept and then doing something entirely different, which, right. You know, I could get behind that idea. But I'm glad you mentioned the 1980s, because doing a sci-fi movie like this, like, modern sci-fi movies are, like, really slick and lots of CGI, but they always kind of end up as these sort of, like, written by committee messes, you know.
Yep.
and not saying all the time, because there's a lot of great sci-fi movies coming out right now, but I don't think, you know, maybe up until Dune, like, we just didn't have, like, a good run of, like, cool sci-fi movies. But the 80s was fucking full of them, you know, especially Aliens comes to mind, obviously, like Return of the Jedi. Even the Star Trek movies were good that came out in the 80s. But, like, one of my favorites is The Last Starfighter. I fucking love that movie.
Fucking love that. Yep.
And just like the general atmosphere, the look and feel of the technology, where it was like kind of using computers, but really just practical and like cool effects. And they made it look futuristic, but also kind of like creepy.
You know, the best way I can describe that sci-fi look of the 80s is the way I guess a lot of people describe the original three Star Wars movies is the sci-fi of the 80s looks lived in. It looks like blue collar people lived in those places. Like, nothing looked slick and like shiny. Everything was kind of clunky and like, it's like Space Truckers, you know. Was kind of clunky and old and weathered, but it also looked futuristic. So there was this feeling of believability, at least to my eyes, when I watch like an 80s sci-fi movie versus a modern sci-fi movie. Like, the modern movie might be able to do way more and make it more realistic to what technology we actually have. But in the 80s, when they were imagining the technology we were going to have, it was this weird amalgam of the tech we had at the time, the idea of like futurism, and just building up this kit-bashed world of existing stuff with stuff that we just are making up on the fly. And it had this great lived-in look. That's the best way I can describe it, is it looked lived-in.
And when you say that makes me think of movies like Blade Runner. Like, Blade Runner is so believable, futuristic, but so believable. Like, you feel like you can reach out and touch it, you know. And then Total Recall is probably like less believable in terms of like things look a little silly, but again, it was dirty and sweaty. Yes. And, you know, I think I feel like I bring that adjective up a lot. Like, movies from the 80s were just like dirty and sweaty. You
know? They really were.
But yeah, and I think that's what makes the sci-fi fun. So yeah, let's do a sci-fi movie that's a little dark in the vein of like Aliens and, you know, Blade Runner and, you know, hell, going into the 90s with like Starship Troopers. You know, I think there's some fun to be had.
Absolutely. And there, now we are not the only ones to have this kind of a thought process when it comes to the concept of Pac-Man. In fact, that's kind of what gave me the seed of an idea, is there is an indie horror game based on Pac-Man where it is set in space, and it's set on a I think it's a space station, but you play like the lone survivor, and of course you're in a yellow suit, and you know, you're running around trying to solve puzzles on the ship while the zombified crew members try to get you. And it's loosely based on Pac-Man. It's really just the color coded, and like, I guess the key cards in the ship are shaped like cherries or bananas for some reason. You know, but it's, you know, it's fun. But I was like, okay, after seeing that, I'm like, but what if we took that idea and ran with it and made it kind of serious?
Okay.
So the concept I was playing with was kind of a mix of stuff like Event Horizon, Dead Space, like those kind of sci-fi horror. And Now, so the basic idea here is that a research vessel goes missing on, you know, whatever planet where, like, I was in my notes, I just called it, was it Iwatani or Iwatani 9? Because it's based on the creator of Pac-Man and the fact that he had a 9-man team. So I was like, oh, that sounds like a fun planet name. But I wanted to have the research crew go there for whatever reason. Maybe they got some kind of signal that there's, you know, some kind of resource there. I don't know. We can figure that out later. But they go to the planet, and within hours of landing, or within hours of going into the atmosphere, they send out a distress signal and then go radio silent. So the team we would be focusing on would be the team sent in to find out what the fuck happened to that crew. So very much like an Event Horizon, where the Event Horizon goes missing and then it reappears, and they send in the Lewis and Clark to go and look for what happened to the crew of the Event Horizon. So very similar concept. But now the crew, of course, is going to be led by the main character of Pac-Man, but I was thinking of having him be named Toru. Because that's the first name of, or am I saying it wrong? Is it Toru or Toru?
I think it's, you say the O long, like Toru, but I could be wrong.
Toru? Okay. Yeah, like, I just want to name him after the creator of Pac-Man. But I figured, you know, Pac-Man sounds like weird, you know, a weird last name or a surname. So what, like, Puckman actually sounds kind of right to me. And because Puckman was the original name, like, if it's Toru Puckman, like Captain Toru Puckman, that sounds like a person's name to me.
Yeah, I can go with that. Yeah, and I kind of like the idea of like a futuristic movie mixing up like cultural references. Like you get
this
character who obviously has this Japanese first name and a non-Japanese last name. And I always think that's kind of fun. You know, it kind of leads to this idea that in the future, like the whole world will be a lot more mixed up. The melting pot will have spread a lot more. And, you know, there won't be as many lines drawn between cultures and stuff. And I like, again, you see that in Blade Runner and stuff like that, where it's like, all these cultures really bleed together.
You know, I just want to take a moment to comment on that real quick. That is one of my favorite things about science fiction, that, again, real life needs to fucking get on it and start mimicking that. Because in sci-fi movies, you see this all the time, where, like you said, in Blade Runner in specific, it's very prominent. But you even see it in fucking Aliens and Star Trek, you know, where basically all of the cultures of the world, like, it's not, you know, Asian culture or, like, you know, European culture, Spanish culture, anything like that. It's Earth culture, you know, and it's like, I love that. I love that it's just like everything is just kind of mixed together in this cool melting pot of, like, taking all the interesting ideas from all over the place and mashing it together as just, this is humanity, and then we're going to deal with aliens outside, you know, and I love that. I think it's fun.
That's an interesting observation, to think of Earth as a culture, you know, almost as a nation unto itself. And it kind of, you know, remove the nationalistic lines of separation that we have now that, you know, cause a lot of problems in the world.
Jesus, and do they just, ever.
And just kind of, you know, come together. But of course, all the Christians will be after us for, oh, there's the one world government. It's a sign of the Armageddon.
I didn't even think of that. Shit.
Sure. I'll take the mark of the beast right now, motherfucker. I'll just say it out loud. Anyway, let's go.
I'll have to tell my fellow people to be like, stop it. No, stop it. We good.
Okay, so Captain Toru Puckman of we were throwing a bunch of names out before we started recording, but I think it'd be funny if it was like, you know, he's like rescue vessel like Namco One or something.
Yes. And like we could even have the research vessel that went missing be something like the something Bandai, because it was Bandai Namco.
yeah, that's great. Yeah, they're there to find the they call it like the Black Bandai or something like that.
Yeah,
you know,
just
to kind of throw in like a cool sounding name. You know, the crew of the Namco One go in to rescue the Black Bandai, or the other way around. You know, the actually I kind of like the other way around. I just threw that out, but like it reminds me of like, you know, Schwarzenegger's team in Predator. They're like this crack, you know, commando rescue team of, you know, the experts, right? You see this in all these stereotypical action movies where where there's like, you know, the knife expert and the explosive expert and, you know, like the master of disguise or whatever, like the strategist, you know, like.
I'm sorry, I'm laughing at the knife expert. I'm picturing how does one get that job? I'm really right. good at stabbing shit.
I know, man, it's kind of scary.
I know, right?
It's like you know, it's like you go around the room. It's like, what are you good at? You know, like tactical strategy. Like, what are you good at? You know, like demolition and explosives. What are you good at? I stab real good.
It's funny because they always have that guy on the team.
Exactly. Yeah, we got to do that. Holy crap. I don't know how many characters we're going to have, but yeah, we got to have like the crack crew of the Black Bandai sent in to rescue the scientific, you know, research vessel.
Yeah, I like the Namco One as being the research vessel. That's a cool idea. And I know I had joked about this off the air, but we could have it the Iwatani 9 be in the Paku Paku system.
Yeah. but of course.
But like, so, okay, the rest of the crew, obviously we should make it up of the only other named things in Pac-Man, which is the ghosts.
Yes.
So in the ghosts, we have, what is it? Pinky, Inky, Blinky, and Clyde. Now, Clyde, obviously, that's a real name. So yeah, let's have the first officer be named Clyde. How about Clyde Midway? Because Midway was the American company. Yeah. So fucking Clyde Midway. That sounds like a name. We'll go with that. So, first officer Clyde Midway.
Okay.
We need a medical officer, or at least, you know, some kind of like doctor or something like that. Let's see, Pinky. I'm picturing their suits being color coded, so I'm picturing like these spacesuits. You know, the captain is yellow, the first officer is orange, medical would be pink, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
I kind of feel like it would be funny in like the Mr. Pink from Reservoir Dogs kind of way if there was a character like the Pinky character, and we'll call him something else like Pinkerton, right? So Pinkerton,
yeah.
Who's the medical officer, but it should be like a real big motherfucker, like John Cena would play this character. You know what I mean? Like somebody that you wouldn't expect to be like the medic, you know?
That would be if it was in the 1980s, we could get like either like Jesse the Body Ventura
or like or like Brian Bosworth or somebody, I don't know, like, or maybe he came later. I can't remember when he was on the scene, but yeah, like one of these big dudes, or like the guy that plays like Ogre from Revenge of the Nerds, you know, like somebody you like wouldn't expect, who's like kind of like tender and caring, but also like they're not just there to be protected by the rest of the crew while they patch people up. Like they can kick ass too, because they're fucking built, you know.
I'm just picturing Jesse the Body Ventura putting a Band-Aid on someone, yeah. And it's making me laugh.
Oh god. Okay, so if Jesse the Body Ventura, we're trying to mix up cultures. Let's have a person named Pinkerton, and his first name is going to be Jesus, right? Pinkerton.
That works. Yeah, Jesus Pinkerton. We need a comms and tech specialist. It'd be kind of funny if the guy who has to be like staring at computers all day is nicknamed Blinky, you know?
Yeah, that works for me.
so it's like, I don't know what his name would actually be, but his nickname has to be Blinky. Cause you know, we'd play on the ghost, but I don't know, like first name, you know, just we could just pick a random first name. I know we use the same ones over and over again. So, James, we haven't used James in a while.
Okay. Yeah, let's do James, and let's do the last name again. Mixing up cultures, let's do like Patel, it's a common Indian name, right? North Indian name. Mm-hmm. Okay, so James Patel, and that leaves us with Inky. We got to figure out how to make Inky work.
Let's see. Well, we're probably going to need like either a weapons guy or like a security officer. Mm-hmm. So like, yeah, we could just call him like he's the security officer. He's the guy with the gun.
She is the woman with the gun, because we got to mix this up. It's the 90s or it's the 80s. So we only have one woman, but we have to have at least one woman.
And we didn't have her be Pinky. So there we go.
There you go. Yeah. There you go.
Okay. So, do we want to make her last name as like on the nose as possible, like Inksman or something like that? Or maybe Hinksman?
We have Puckman, like Puckman. What about just something like Inksley? Inksley, that sounds like a good
Inksley name. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, and we just need a first name.
I have no idea. I'm so bad with first names. You know me. I cycle through the same like 10, dude. Yeah. I'm awful when it comes to first names.
Okay, let's go with like the classic Russian like Spetsnaz weapons expert woman, and she'll be Nadia Inksley.
I like it. That works. Yeah. So yeah, so her, you know, code name or nickname Inky. So again, we have our Inky, Blinky, Pinky, and Clyde. Yeah.
And of course, there has to be a scene in the movie where somebody's like, "Wait, they call you Blinky? You're Inksley? What are you, Pinkerton?" And like, you know, like, "What's your name, Stinky?" And it's like, "It's fucking Clyde, motherfucker." Oh, dude, Tony Todd should play Clyde. That's who I'm picturing in my head now. As soon as I did that voice, I was like, that's the fucking Candyman telling you to shut your trap, cracker.
Oh, my God. Abso-fucking-lutely. Yes, I love it. I love it. Oh, my God. So, yeah. So now we have our main characters. And it makes sense to what you would do in the 80s. You got to get all the characters in there, but how would you do it? You turn it completely on its ear. These aren't ghosts. They're random military spacemen.
Yes, but, that's awesome.
So we send this crew in, and they're going to go to the Iwatani 9. So I'm picturing this planet to be like have a very viscous, thick atmosphere. So very much like Venus, where it's like there's a lot of like cloud coverage and it's like a lot of gas coverage. Very hard to see like what's going on. So I want to have like this scene where the team goes in, and as soon as they start to enter the atmosphere, all of their nav equipment goes fucking haywire. Like they can't control it. They're, you know, they're coming in too fast, you know. And then once they break through that cloud coverage, they see that not only the crashed ship of the Namco One, but this gigantic facility. Like, I mean, this thing is fucking like a mountain. The way I'm picturing it is picture like a black obelisk, you know, like solid stone, like, but sheer stone going all the way up into the cloud coverage and as far as you can see in either direction. So they land the ship near as close to the, as they can get to the Namco One. They see this massive star, and like, it's just like looming ever present. Like, I picture it would be this great matte painting where it's okay, like, yeah, the people would be real, real tiny, and it just goes on forever. Like, it's just fucking huge.
Yeah. As the ship's coming in, like, they break through the cloud cover, and like, yeah, like the ship is this tiny little speck, and there's this amazing, like, giant black obelisk. But when the characters get down on the ground, to them, it's just like a black wall, like shiny black, like obsidian wall, and like they can't even see the edges of it.
Exactly. Yeah, it goes on forever, and like the ground is going to be all craggy and rocky, and like, it's, I'm picturing a very like almost Mars-like surface, in the sense of there's no like foliage anywhere. It's just like rocks and sand and like gases spitting up from the ground randomly, almost like was it LV-426 in Aliens that they were terraforming? I'm pretty sure that's the planet. But in Aliens, you specifically see like they're terraforming the planet and it's completely unstable. Like there's like all the gases are venting up from the ground and shit, and it's all rocky and craggy. That's kind of what I'm picturing. Yeah, sure. So they get there, they check the ship, they see the Namco One is extremely damaged. Like, it clearly hit something on its way in, maybe the obelisk, who knows. But they go in, there's no crew anywhere aboard the ship. The comms are down, like, equipment is missing. So like medical equipment, weapons, all that's missing. But there we see little like almost like a breadcrumb trail of pin lights. So like with how fucked up the atmosphere is and how dark and volatile it is, the crew, to get back to their ship, they left a trail of these tiny, almost like, picture you know those little lights you can just kind of like glue to your wall and like press in.
Oh, you know, yeah,
like,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like the little Dollar Tree lights.
Yeah.
I'm picturing like a series of those, where it's like you would just click them on and drop them and they would stick to, you know, a surface, or they would maybe they would hover. Who knows? If it's future. But
yeah,
have
it's like a futuristic version of like a glow stick, right? That they're going to like drop. Right. Yeah. Okay. That works.
So, and because, you know, the whole reason, obviously, I'm sticking to that is because Pac-Man, you know, you follow the little fucking dots. Okay. So, But the whole point is I want them to see like a small doorway, like, you know, maybe the doorway is like 20 foot high or something, but in comparison to the structure, it looks like this tiny little door, you know, but yeah. They're gonna follow the lights and head into there and find that this is a gigantic maze. And the architecture itself is completely alien and foreign to them. So I'm kind of thinking of like At the Mountains of Madness, when the main characters in At the Mountains of Madness get to that section of like where the architecture is. They talk about the stone architecture and how alien it is. Like, it's not something it looks like mankind made. So I want it to be that kind of same feel of just like, it's similar enough where it's like, yeah, okay, this looks like something that humans could make, but still have it be slightly alien. So like, again, the sheer size and how everything would be perfectly symmetrical and like, you know, there's no texture. It's just all sheer walls. And the way I'm picturing it in my head is really creeping me out.
Yeah. No, I think it's perfect. And of course, like, you know, the dialogue throughout the scene after our crew lands is they're going to see the, you know, other like wrecked ship, the Namco one. And then, you know, all their comms gear is down. So they can't even like radio to each other. Like, something is like blocking all of that technology, whether it's blocking radio waves or, you know, whatever. Like, somehow they can't even talk to each other. So they're just yelling over like the rushing wind, trying to, you know, tell the audience what they're finding in the ship, which is nothing. But it looks like the crew, like, you know, packed up and left. They took all their shit with them. And then, yeah, they find the lights. And, you know, of course, they're going to follow them in. And someone's going to make some comment about how, like, you know, this isn't man-made, you know, or this is definitely man-made, you know, like, and then someone else makes some comment about, like, you know, you sure it was man? Like, you know, like,
yes,
you
know, yes.
Like, kind of hinting at the fact that this is like alien-made, you know, technology, obviously. But right. Yeah, I think it's great. It's going to be super fucking creepy. They're going to follow these pin lights into the door. You know, they're gonna be a little bit hard to see at first just because of the blowing wind and dust and shit outside, but then as soon as they get inside, is it just an opening, or is it a door that goes up and down or opens in some way, or is it just literally like there's an opening in this wall?
I feel like it should be an opening in the wall, and then so when they go, because what I'm thinking is that the maze would change.
Okay.
So like when, because again, like every in Pac-Man, every level is slightly different with new openings, mm-hmm. like, you know, on the sides, how there was like, you know, on the one level, it's like just on the left and right, there's an opening. And then on the next level, the left and right, top and bottom, there's openings. And then on the next level, it's like only the top and bottom. So what I was picturing is that the maze would move and shift.
Okay.
So
okay.
They would. Yeah. So at first, when they walk in, it's wide open. And then maybe after they're in, you know, for so long, the walls start to move.
Okay. Yeah. And maybe like it's almost imperceptible when they move. Like, it's just confusing to them that they're like, wait, this wall wasn't there, you know? And it's like, so what I'm thinking, the reason I asked about the door is, again, just to kind of drive home the eerie factor, is what if as they go through the threshold of the opening, they get inside and then suddenly like they can't hear the wind. There's no dust inside. Like, it's still dark, but it's almost like the walls are kind of glowing, like they're kind of luminescent, but it's still mostly lit by, you know, the pin lights on the ground, but it's like it's a little bit easier to see, so it's not totally pitch black, but it's right. Like, then of course they're going to comment on like, well, like, what's going on? Like, it's weird. Like, there's some kind of a barrier in the opening, and, you know, they can't hear shit from outside. It's like dead, eerie-esque, silent inside, you know? So it goes from being really loud and chaotic to you can hear a pin drop, which for me would be creepy as fuck.
You know? Oh, God, yeah. And that would be one of the easiest effects and yet most effective to do in a movie like this, where you have that swirling wind and everyone's yelling and it's loud. It's this cacophony of noise and voices. And then you cross the threshold into this, like, dark black temple. You go in and suddenly it's silence and you could just hear the footfalls of the crew. That would be fucking terrifying, dude.
Yeah, exactly. I love the atmosphere of that. And like, again, I like this idea that maybe they don't know the walls are moving at first, because obviously we have to move our group, you know, into the building. They're going to be moving as like a military unit, you know, guns pointed in different directions. You know, they're following the lights. So, of course, every time they go around a corner, it's like they're doing that thing where it's like, you know, they're hiding at the corner and trying to cover each other, you know. So
yep.
They're acting as if there's enemy combatants or somebody in the maze, but of course they're not finding anybody. They're just following these pin lights, getting more and more kind of nervous and chatty. But then at some point, the lights just end at one of the walls. Like, that's just as black as the outside. And it's like, where the fuck does it go for? Like, did they just walk through the goddamn wall, or did they leave the lights in a straight line pointed directly at the wall? Like, what now? You know, and it's like obvious that like the walls moved at some point between when the old crew got there and now. And so, yeah, I think this would be a kind of a cool thing. We could do it at least one more time before the characters figure it out. Like, maybe they find some other lights and they're like, oh, cool, we found the trail. And then they fucking ended a wall again. Like, what's going on?
You know? Right. Yeah, no, like, okay, so I love that. So we have them going, we have the clear shift in sound, you know, where but cueing the audience into like, oh shit, something's not right. And maybe have like you know, have what's her name? Inky or Inksman or Inksley. We'll have her comment like, why did it get so quiet or something like that, like what happened to the noise? So just kind of like, you know, cuz you have to pretend your audience is stupid and call stuff out sometimes. Yeah, exactly. And in the 80s they did that a lot. So we'll have them like, it's very clear from the audio cue, but then have somebody make a comment about it and have them like, maybe that's where they start getting a little jumpy. Like everybody like arm, like, you know, readies their weapon, like what the fuck's going on? And they continue to follow the lights and then get to that, you know, wall. And then I'm picturing like, you know, Clyde, you know, running his hand along the wall, be like, there's no opening here. Where the fuck did they go? And it's just like, you know, patting the wall, trying to find an opening. And they maybe when they turn around, now the opening that they came through isn't there.
Oh, shit. Yeah. And they didn't even hear it. It was like so quiet. Yeah, that's awesome.
Creepy. So have them be like, you know, where the fuck are we? What are we doing? And then maybe they see another like maybe another hallway near where they came in and be like, was that there before? You know, like have that question lingering, like, what do we do? So maybe they just start walking through the maze, and we can have like certain little things like, you know, maybe we can find like a medic pack or something, or something that like doesn't belong there. Like clearly one of the crew members of the Namco One was there. So like that kind of gives them heart to press forward. So maybe it could be something. Maybe it's as simple as a flashlight, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
Be like, what's this doing here?
Or maybe, and this is kind of like desperate too. So as the crew is coming in, they're following the lights, right? At some point, the lights are going to hit the wall, and then they're like, well, now the fuck would we do? But they go off down this one. Somebody has to say out loud, well, maybe we should leave a trail of lights so we can get out. And then someone else is going to be like, well, it didn't do the crew of the Namco One any good. They obviously couldn't follow the lights back out. You know, again, tell the audience why they never came out, and why are our new people like not leaving a breadcrumb trail? And it's because they're like, they realize immediately that it's pointless. But then, yeah, as they're going through, they're not really seeing any like multiple hallway junctures. They're just kind of going down a hallway that's turning and twisting. They're not really given any choices of where else to go yet. But yeah, and then what they find, let's have them find somebody's pouch, somebody's bag that's full of the pin lights, because whoever was dropping them then from the first crew realized how pointless it was and just said fuck it and left the bag, you know.
I like that. Yeah, because then we could have that whole question and build the fear factor of like, why did they leave these here? And then like maybe even have someone like Clyde say, maybe they realized it was pointless, you know. Yeah. Something like that. And just like, oh shit, it's dark and ominous, something bad's coming, you know.
Yeah, so, exactly. And like, obviously we need to start having like some creepy shit happen, but like, for me, like the creepiest thing to happen next would be, again, I didn't mention that they didn't have any like junctures or choices to make. They're just being like herded almost, but then they have to get to like a crossroads, and then you have the question amongst themselves of where do we go? Like, which one do we pick? Do we stick together? Do we split up? They're going to argue about it. It's going to create some tension, you know? And it's like, fuck, if I was in that position, I would be paralyzed. I wouldn't be able to choose. Like, which hallway do you go down out of like the three that are available in this like cross junction?
I'm almost picturing like, you know, the hallway that they're in, it comes out to like maybe like even a like a big open room, but like you have a hallway that's going forward still, and then two that are going, you know, to the sides. Maybe they can even see like the room that they're entering, you know, they can see above the walls, like they can see the ceiling far above the walls, but the walls are still like 30 feet fucking high. So it's not like they can climb over these sheer walls to get a better vantage point to see, but they see that they're entering like a deeper maze.
Yes.
You know, like there's all sorts of pathways. So they can, maybe they,
this would be the realization that they were in a maze. Up to this point, like, we knew that they were in a maze, but they don't necessarily know because they've just been following the hallway. Maybe this is the point when, you know, Captain Puckman is just like, it's a fucking maze. You know, this is when they realize that, like, this, there's more to this even than they thought. They're already creeped out, and now it just got worse.
Right. And the reason I was picturing, like, to have, like, that really high vantage point, like, above them is because anything could be watching them in the maze.
Ooh, nice.
So they're traveling through the maze, but something could be watching them from above.
Yes. So and we should find out what that is, but we need to drop some hints now. Like, are they, so like, absolutely. What are we going to do? Like, are we going to have some weird movement, some noises? Like, I mean, I know you have some ideas, but I'm just going to throw out there. There's got to be somebody who is just like convinced that there's something moving in the darkness. And it's like, you know, pointing their gun this way and pointing it that way and pointing it this way. Like, fuck, like, I swear. And everyone else is like, you're crazy. There's nothing there. There's no noise. There's no people. Like, this place is empty. But like, you know, one of them, you know, maybe it's Blink, is just convinced that like there's something, some kind of movement, like just on my periphery that I can't, like, I can't get my eye to catch on.
Right. Okay. Here's what I'm thinking. So since Blinky is the is going to be like the comms and tech guy, and obviously nothing is working, maybe what we have him do is kind of like stay right where he is, like at that crossroads. He's got his weapon, he's got his pin lights, and we split up into two teams. So we have like, you know, like Puckman and Clyde go one way, and Inksley and
Pinkerton,
thank you, they go the other way. And then have him basically be like Puckman say, like, okay, you know, Blink, you know, you stay right here. We're going to go down this hallway. You guys go down that hallway, go like, you know, maybe says something like go 100 paces, turn and come back. See if you see anything. Like, we don't want to split up for too long, but we have to find out which way to go. So like the whole idea is to leave the pin lights leading back to where Blink is. And, you know, and he's sitting there, he's nervous as hell, right? Like, he doesn't want to stay there by himself. So that the two groups split off and they start walking. They like walk into the darkness, and like, you can see the little pin lights, but they're getting dark, like harder and harder to see as the deeper they go into the darkness. And so we're going to focus on Blink, have him sitting there getting more and more nervous. And maybe we start hearing sounds. We hear like something like kind of like nearby, like a whisper or something. Nice. And have him like jump and be like, what is it? And have him be like yelling like, guys, can anyone still hear me? Like, I think there's something in here with us. Like, and he's just panicking, right?
Yes, nice.
So, and then we're going to focus on one of the teams. Like, maybe we go to Clyde and Puckman. They come to a dead end, and they find nothing. So they turn and start making their way back. And then we cut over to, like, you know, Nadia and Pinkerton, and, like, they're looking around. They see, like, maybe there's two other pathways for them to follow. But they're like, no, we're not going down those yet. Let's turn and go back. They start to go back, but they find that the wall has moved. So now they're cut off. So it's like, where the fuck are, like, what do we do? You know, maybe Puckman and Clyde get back to where Blink was, and all we see is the bag of pin lights again. Like, yes. Or like maybe his bag or something.
Yeah.
And like,
yeah, he's gone.
Fucking gone. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure. No, I like that. I like that. So now we have Pinkerton and Inksley are like in the maze somewhere. And now we can focus on like Puckman and Clyde. They're together. And yeah, they're back. I'm just like orienting myself by repeating what you said. Right. So yeah, they're in this room, and now they realize there's something has to be there. Something or someone is there. And, you know, now it's just like, you know, lock and load and like, you know, fan out, whatever. They're going to go from search mode to now they're in a battle. But of course, you know, they're going to end up getting separated even more. And, I know we need to do something with like the other things in the game. Like there's the dots on the ground. We kind of took care of that. And yeah, there's like these weird fruits, and then there's like those big dots that Pac-Man eats. And
oh yeah, the power pellets.
I'm trying to think if there's anything else in the game that we need to kind of like address. But yeah, I definitely like this idea of like, let's break everybody up. And then you're going to kind of like jump the scene from like focusing on Clyde, what's he doing, focusing on Puckman, what's he doing, now they're separated because they tried to fan out and got blocked, and then now we're back to Pinky and, you know, or Pinkerton and Inksley, and you know they're doing the same thing, they're going around every corner like they're expecting, you know, bad guys, but it's just like more and more and more, and it's like where the fuck is everybody or everything,
right? Yeah, no, I like this idea. We can even show like a passage of time, not doing like a montage type of thing, but have like we see Puckman and Clyde going through the maze, like looking around, trying to find what happened to Inksley and Pinkerton. Maybe like once they get back and they see that Blink is missing, they look over in the direction that Inksley and Pinkerton went, and like it's just a solid wall. And maybe even Clyde could start hitting and be like, the walls are moving, or make some kind of comment, yeah, of like, so, you know, something else is controlling this place. Like just kind of make some kind of reference to, hey, we get it. Shit's moving around now. We're trapped.
Yeah.
But,
and you tell the dumb audience, like what's going right on too. Like if you haven't clued in on it yet, the walls are moving, people.
And I always find that funny because they do it in so many movies and video games where they'll like show you something and then have a character announce what that something is.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, I get it. It's like, it's kind of a tired trope, but I mean, it's there for a reason.
Some people cannot follow along, you know?
It's like, absolutely.
It goes back to one of my favorite, like, cerebral kind of nerd jokes, which is there are two types of people in the world. People who can extrapolate from an incomplete set of data.
Yes.
Yeah, so if you didn't get that joke, I'm sorry.
That's good. But yeah, so like, so we're going to have them like notice that shit's moving. So now we're going to be cutting back and forth, and we're going to see, like you said, the almost militaristic, you know, like clearing of the halls. Like now they got their guns at the ready, you know, they're going through the halls, like looking around corners, ready for a fight. And we just see them like going through like the different mazes. And maybe when we focus back on Pinkerton and Inksley, we could have Pinkerton comment on, we've been in here for fucking hours. Like, what are we doing? Like, where is everybody? Like, they're getting frustrated. They've been in there for a long time. Because I was thinking like the whole fruit thing that's in the game, we could actually have that almost be our mirage in this. Like at one point they're getting really fucking hungry and they see like a cornucopia of food and it's not real. You know, it's just an illusion.
It's funny. I had the same idea. I was about to say the same thing, you know, like because you mentioned they were in there for hours and I was thinking like days, like the passage of time would be like people start to grow like, you know, 5 o'clock shadow stubble or whatever. And,
right,
you know, eventually they're getting weak and like maybe at some point they decide to like sleep like, you know, back to back. And, you know, you watch me, I'll watch you. But they doze off. But of course, they're sleeping like shit because they're hearing the, you know, the breathing, right, wind and all that. And yeah, eventually at some point, like they're going to start losing it because they can't sleep. They're panicked all the time. They only brought a limited amount of like food in their packs that like ran out like who knows how many days ago. Like, you know, we could start off with hours and then eventually like again have a montage where it's like now it's like, fuck, how long have they been in there? Like they're going to waste away pretty soon.
Right. No, I like that. And plus the idea of the sound effect thing, like keep in mind, it's going to be super fucking quiet in this facility. So all we're going to hear are like their footfalls. And then when we do hear that weird breathy, like, you know, wind, that's going to be super unsettling for every one of the characters to be like, what the fuck is that? Like, why do I keep hearing that? Like, just panicking.
Oh, dude. So yeah, we do this like little passage of time. People are freaking out, and I maybe it doesn't have to be so much to the point where they're like, you know, wasting away, but like we definitely needs to be at least a couple of days. They're getting hungry and tired. But at some point, we show Pinkerton and Inksley who are still together, and they're just like they're walking because they have nothing else to do. Like, you know, walking, hoping to get somewhere. And at one point, they go around a corner and they see fucking pin lights again, and they're like, oh shit, like, you know, like somebody else has been here. Maybe it's the first crew. Maybe it's the people who came with him. Maybe, you know, maybe it's Puckman and Clyde. They get all excited all of a sudden, and they're like following the pin lights around a corner. And then they come around and they open up into this big fucking room. And then they see Blink's pack on the ground and they realize, fuck, they've just been walking around in circles for like a week or whatever, just to end up right back in the same fucking room where they started.
Nice. Yeah, no, I like that. So I think it should be like at least a couple of days. I do like that idea that because I like seeing the montage of them trying to sleep and all like how that would go, that because that would be fucking terrifying. But yeah, like we'll have Pinkerton and Inksley find Blink's pack like they've just gone in a giant circle. But I think we should have Clyde and Puckman find Blinky. Like actually find him. So let's have so they're going around the corner and like clearly at this point, like they're both punchy. They've been in here a while. Yeah. Their rations are almost non-existent at this point. You know, they're jumping at sounds. Let's have them turn a corner and we see in the corner of the room, like the light that's going to be on the end of their gun, because of course they would have, you know, the lights on their guns. They turn the corner and you see over in the corner of this big empty room, Blinky crouched down like in the corner facing the wall, and have them be like, "Blink, is that Blink?" And they go running over, and then it's maybe as soon as Clyde puts his hand on him, like he grabs Blink's shoulder, he turns his head around and we see like his eyes are just glowing bright white. Nice. And he's fucking zombified. Like he is not alive anymore. And he just grabs a hold of Clyde and just have like, I want to have the light from inside of Blink just like go into Clyde's eyes and have him start convulsing and like foaming at the mouth. And then he stands up just like Blink. And now they both got the glowing fucking white eyes. They open their mouth and it's like this glowing white coming out of their mouth. And they just both start coming right at Puckman.
Nice.
So have him start fucking gunning them, like just like fuck you, just start shooting them, and it's not doing a damn thing. Like it's not hurting them at all. They're just coming for him. So he has no choice but to turn and run, and now he's alone. Yeah. So and maybe because this place is so silent, when you know he starts firing his gun, Nadia and Pinkerton like actually hear something in the distance, but it sounds really far away.
Yeah, let me go back and insert a fun line of dialogue, right? So, like, when Pinkerton and Inksley find Blink's pack. Now, if we did this right, or if I'm remembering it right, we know that Puckman and Clyde know that Blink was missing.
Yes.
Right? But, like, Pinkerton and Inksley got cut off before they got back to the room. So, they see the pack, and one of them has to be like, okay, well, this is Blink's pack, but where's Blink? And then it's like you cut to Puckman and Clyde, like, in the hallway, and the very next thing they do is find Blink in the corner and get chased. Yeah, and then we cut back to Pinkerton and Inksley, and, yeah, they hear this, like, almost like fireworks in the distance noise, and suddenly, like, now they're on high alert.
Right. Yeah, and so, like, let's have them start running, you know, like, in a direction, like, toward the gunshots, and, like, maybe they're still trying to use their comms, even though it's, like, you know, pointless, like, they're, you know, yelling, you know, Captain, you know, come in, can you hear us, like, that kind of thing. They're running in the direction toward the gunfire. It's getting louder as they're going, and then they run into a fucking dead end. Like, it's just, like, whatever, like, they can hear the gunfire beyond the wall. But they don't like they're because, again, remember, there's that big opening at the top. So they can they would hear the echoing of the gunfire, but they wouldn't be able to find it. It would be bouncing off the walls. Like, how can you get a beat on it?
Yeah.
So they're getting deeper and deeper into the maze, like running around. What I want them to eventually do, though, is like at some point run into the crew of the Namco One. Yeah. So like maybe they like turn a corner and they see, just like we saw with Blink, have like a bunch of various, you know, astronauts or people in spacesuits crouch down, like facing away from the viewer, like facing away from Pinkerton and Inksley, and then have them be like, hello, like what, you know, is, you know, what the fuck is going on? Like they say something, and I want to have all of them like turn in unison and look at the two. And again, the white glowing, and I'm picturing it almost like, picture if their eyes were just literally nothing but light. Like no eyeball at all. Almost like they had to rotoscope it on the film where they just like they paint white like white smoke coming off of their eyes, just bright white light. And when they open their mouth, you can't even see the interior of their mouth. All you just see is bright white light. So have them like turn and look at them with that like eerily glowing face. And maybe because, again, Nadia is the fucking weapons expert. She don't waste no fucking time. She just starts blasting. She pulls the Danny DeVito. So I started blasting.
Oh, and real quick, too, like when they find him, one of them should definitely pull out a flashlight and shine it on, like, you know, hello, who's there? They shine it on the, and we see just for a minute the back of one of the crew in their, like, jumpsuit, right? And just have, right, they say, like, Namco crew, like, on the back. And it's like, oh, yes, fuck. Like, real big letters, again, tell the audience what's going on, you know? And
right,
we never really talked about, like, how many people were on the Namco. But since it sounds like, you know, we need to have, like, more of these creepy-ass zombies in this giant maze, you know, again, let's, you know, kind of back up and insert when they get like a briefing of what the mission is at the beginning of the movie. And it could be like a voiceover while we see the Black Bandai like flying in. Right. And it's like,
right,
somebody's explaining what the mission is. And it should be that the Namco one was, yeah, it was a research vessel with like, you know, 156 heads on board, everything from scientists to crew to the captain to, you know, the cook, whatever. Like, the idea is that this was an active, like transport, you know, ship that was bringing this crew of people to live potentially on this island or this planet. So they bring all this stuff. But now we have like a potential, like a lot of people that we can have, you know, in this maze somewhere.
Abso-fucking-lutely. I love that. So yeah, I think you're right. It should be like well over 100 people. But very much like the fucking Enterprise, where it's like, yeah. it's an exploration vessel. There's going to be people who handle, you know, obviously engineering. There's people who handle like food, like, you know, the gardening and stuff on the ship. So you'd have all sorts of different walks of life. So you would need all these different crews. And when they crash, and we already saw in the beginning of the movie, when they go onto the ship is completely abandoned and all their gear is missing. So it's like, clearly they went inside to seek shelter, and that's, you know, how we got our guys in there. But the idea of when they turn the corner into like this big opening and you just see like tons of those guys, like maybe there's like fucking 20 of them.
Yeah.
You know, just like all along the walls, all facing away, you know, and like you said, the flashlight lands on it. You see like Namco One on like the back of the pack, like that the guy's wearing, and they all turn in unison and look at him, open their mouths in unison. You see the bright white light, and they all just start coming toward them. And maybe like when they're coming toward them, they're not even like walking. Maybe they're just kind of gliding, like toes touching the ground, like just gliding forward.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
something is moving them.
Almost like they're being like pushed from behind or something. And oh, and of course you have to hear that, you know, that breathing.
Yes.
Wind. It's like, you have to question, are they making that noise with their mouths, or is something else, like, is that like the air that's moving them? Like, what is making the noise? Like, it shouldn't be clear yet at this point.
I don't even know if we should make it clear, like just have that noise be around them.
it's the noise. Yeah.
Right. But I love, because, you know, that's the other thing. Like, the only other noise that's prominent with Pac-Man is wah, 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 and we don't want to have that. No. So
that's one thing we can leave out of the movie. You know, if Masters of the Universe and Super Mario Brothers, they left a lot of important shit out. We'll leave out the weird Paku Paku sound.
Yes. But like, so we see them, like, they're just like gliding toward them, like arms outstretched, just like dead expression. Like, you know, their expressions never change. It's just the open eyes, open mouth, and they're just floating toward them. So they start, of course, Nadia's going to unleash. She's just going to start fucking shooting. Yeah. And it's having no effect whatsoever. And Pinkerton is the one that like grabs him, is like, we got to fucking go. Like, and they start running. So they're running their asses off, and these things, their speed never changes. They're just constantly coming for you. Ugh. So like, yeah, exactly. Like they don't need to hurry. They'll get you. That type of thing.
They're moving kind of fast, like uncomfortably fast, but not like running fast, you know, just like, you know, this steady, creepy oncoming danger that every time you turn around, it's somehow the same distance behind you, no matter how fast you run.
Right. It's never going to stop coming for you. So like, we're going to have them running, you know, blind through the halls. And then, of course, you know, you have Puckman doing the same thing, like trying to run from Blink. Maybe we could even do a thing like where we pan the camera up like above the maze, and we can see like, you know, the gunshots from Nadia and the gunshots from Puckman, and see like that they're pretty far away from each other. And then, like, you know, zoom the camera in on one of them.
That'd be awesome. Yeah, pull the camera so far back, it's like you get to see the Pac-Man game board, you know, in the shape of the maze. Yeah, and then you just see the little flashes of like machine gun nozzle, you know, light fire coming out. And yeah, that'd be awesome. Yeah, like let's zoom out of Inksley and Pinkerton, and then zoom back into, you know, Puckman and Clyde.
I feel like we're when we pan out from them running from the crew, we'll do the thing that you know, where we see the gunfire in the higher part of the maze, and we'll zoom in on Puckman. So he's running, and I'm picturing like almost like a like running toward the camera, like the camera is like right up on his face, and we're looking over his shoulder, and we just see Clyde and Blink just floating behind him, like coming straight toward him. Yes. So it's just like that fear of like, holy shit, they're not giving up and he can't stop them. So I want him to be running through the maze, and eventually maybe he finds like there's a glowing sphere just like hovering in midair. It's the same bright white light that is coming out of these creatures, or a similar, maybe it's not bright white. Like I want it to be a equally bright, something that's like glowing, that's going to attract his attention. But I want, when he picks it up, it to like force them to turn and float the other way.
Yeah. Okay. I'm a little bit doubtful that he would just see some strange alien-esque thing in this maze and just grab it, because he just learned how dangerous the maze is, like just now.
That's
like,
true. That right? is true.
So what if it's so bright, this thing that he's finding is so bright that he's not even sure what it is. He's just running toward the light because he can finally see, like, oh shit, there's a room that actually has light besides this weird, you know, otherworldly blue glow that's been coming off the walls this whole time for days, and our little flashlights or pin lights. Now it's like, maybe he thinks it's an exit. He's just running toward something different than what he's seen before, almost out of you know, desperation. What other choice does he have? So he runs into this room, and it's so bright he can't see anything. He puts his hand up, he shields his eyes, and he walks into the middle of the room. And I don't know if we want to have him like trip, or maybe he touches it by mistake, but it's like he doesn't really understand what's happening. Or maybe he reaches his hand out in front of him, like looking. Yeah, that's it. That's what it is. He's covering his face with one hand to block out the light that's so bright it's blinding. The other hand is reached out in front of him, like feeling for a wall. But instead, he puts his hand down on like this big orb. And it's like as soon as he touches it, it's like his hand is almost like almost sinking into it, like it's gelatinous, you know. And then I don't know where you were going from there, but I was just like, that would be a cool way to get him to, like, you know, touch what I'm assuming is a power pellet thing.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing, I wanted to have the only way to like defend is by, again, this weird alien artifact. You know, when you were talking, it gave me an idea. So like, yes, I love what you're saying. Like, he's going toward the light. He sees the glow at the end of this hall. He's running toward it. He goes into like this room at the end of the hall, and it's bright white, and he's kind of stumbling forward. And then, yeah, maybe like he reaches forward, like he's putting his hand out, like you said, and it touches, and maybe he pulls back when he touches it, and like, he's like, oh God, what is that? You know, like kind of freaks out a little bit, but he turns, and the ghosts can't, or the zombies, whatever, they can't come into the room. They're just like nice. Outside the room looking at him. And then like once his kind of his eyes acclimate to the bright light, he looks around, and maybe there's like a couple members of the Namco One. They're dead. Like they've died of exposure or whatever, or starvation. They're like dead in their suits, but they're not coming back. So it's like they found that this was safety and they hid in that room, but they couldn't leave. So they couldn't get out, and they eventually just starved to death in there because they didn't want to become like the rest of the crew.
Okay, so yeah, so there's like skeletal or near skeletal remains in the room that are obviously not zombified, like huddled in a corner. Oh, I think that's great. Yeah, it's awesome. Like they just were trapped, like that guy on top of the tower in Tremors who was afraid to come down and
yes!
die of dehydration.
Exactly. It's almost like the quote unquote safe room, but you're in the middle of hell. How are you safe? You know. Yeah. So it's like the things can't get you, but you can't get out. So it's a catch 22. Yeah. So we have Puckman sitting there, like, so now he's trapped. He's in the room where he's safe, but he doesn't want to fuck with the weird orb because it's like, you know, it's this weird gelatinous glowy force that he doesn't know what the fuck it is. And then you have the two zombies like literally just standing right at the threshold of the doorway, not moving, not blinking, just staring at him. So now we're going to cut back to Inksley and Pinkerton and have them like, you know, rushing through the maze, trying to find a way out. We're going to have to kill some, either one or both of them off.
Yeah, we should definitely kill one of them. Let's do one at a time because we only have, you know, like five people in this movie, right? So
yeah, we only got three left.
Yeah, I think Pinkerton should probably be the next one because what I'm picturing is like we need to ramp up the whole tension. This movie has been like slow and creepy and atmospherically eerie, but now that we've kind of revealed like what's happening, like what the danger is, let's just fucking go for it. So now we have Inksley and Pinkerton like running and shooting and fuck, I don't know. Maybe it's like, you know, Walking Dead zombies. They can hear the noise. I don't know. But like suddenly it's like every corner they turn, it's like, fuck, there's more of them. Fuck, there's more of them. Like they're being surrounded. And, you know, but at some point they have to like stop and figure out like, what are we going to do? And I kind of think like, you know, Pinkerton is, he'll go down fighting. I don't know if it's a take a last stand thing or he just gets overwhelmed. But I had this idea that came up when we were talking about the moving of the walls when it comes to Inksley. And I have a cool way, I think, to get her to escape this immediate danger and kind of be on her own, which is I just don't know if she's cold-hearted enough to abandon Pinkerton or if Pinkerton dies enough to distract the zombies to give her time to escape. But the idea is that, like, they've been running around for days and days with these moving walls. They can't predict it. They're just getting stuck. It's like they have zero control. But she's, like, a badass motherfucker. So she's trying to take back control. And so she's been thinking about this. I mean, obviously, we can't say this all out loud. Like, the audience will have to extrapolate. But she's been trying to figure this out. And what she does is, like, they're running around corners, around corners, around corners. The zombies are coming out. They get down, and it's another dead end. And when you mentioned the dead end before, I thought of this, but I was like, wait, save it. So they get to this dead end. They turn and face the horde. Here they come. Pinkerton's going to go down. But what she does is she's figuring out the wall. So she's like touching the wall, looking at it like it can't move. So she turns around, faces the horde, and then she just starts walking backwards. And it's like the wall's not there. And it's like because she wasn't looking at it, it was able to move. So she fucking figured it out. Like this whole time they've been running into walls because it's like the maze is trying to fuck with them. It's like it moves when you're not looking at it. So she finally figures it out, gets out of the room. But maybe either she abandons Pinkerton kind of cold-heartedly or she figures this out, but like Pinkerton doesn't like, you know, turn around and get through the opening in time or something.
What if she doesn't figure it out? What if it's by accident? So like, here's what I'm picturing. Like the two of them are running from the zombies. They hit the dead end, right? Or like they see that they're coming up on a dead end. So they turn, they load their clips, and they just start fucking firing. And they're shooting and shooting and shooting. And, you know, maybe Inksley is backing up, like, you know, literally going to put her back against the wall. Mm-hmm. But she's like firing, firing, firing. We see the swarm of fucking Namco One zombies come down on Pinkerton, and like he goes down fighting. Maybe he's like he's fucking shattering the glass on their helmets, like punching it, shit. Like he's trying to survive. But they eventually, you see the smoke come out of their mouths and into his, and he, you know, convulses and turns. But like maybe like this is the last thing that Inksley sees is like Pinkerton turns and points at her right as a wall closes in front of her or something like that. Or like, I like the idea of them not knowing or like not looking at the walls, but I'm trying to figure out a way to like get her on her own where it would still close off.
Yeah, no, I like this idea of her not figuring it out until it happens by mistake. So what we need to do is define where the wall was so we know when she's past it, and then that's when she'll know that something weird just happened, right? So yeah, they run down this hallway, they get to the dead end. Instead of seeing it ahead of them and then turning around in the middle, like they run all the way to the end of the hallway. They're like, fuck, it's a dead end, what are we gonna do? They decide to lock and load. They drop some shit on the ground, whatever it is. They drop their packs, they drop their lights, whatever, anything that they don't need that's gonna encumber them. And then, you know, they start walking back toward the crowd of zombies like, fuck you, we're gonna bring the fight to you, right? So now we've created distance between the wall and where they're confronting the zombie horde. The zombie horde comes at them, then they're starting to be forced to back up, and again Pinkerton goes down fighting. Inksley's just using every glass clip she has as she's walking backwards, keeping her distance. At a certain point she like looks down and because she realizes that she's walked beyond the shit that they dropped on the ground, which is now like 5 feet in front of her, and then have her turn around in a panic like there's something behind her. She turns around, there's nothing but a black hallway. She turns around again to go fire at the zombie horde, and there's a fucking wall there. Like, What the fuck? Yes. Now she's cut off and Pinkerton's gone and she's all alone.
Yes. Yes. Perfect. So after that, we go back to Puckman. And so he's still trapped in the room where he's looking around, realizes that he can't go anywhere. Like, this room is a dead end. There's corpses laying around, you know, in the corners. There's the weird glowing orb in the center of the room. And the ghosts are, or the zombies are right outside just staring at him. Like, they're not crossing the threshold, but he can't get out. So at this point, it's like, what other choice does he have other than clearly, you know, the ghosts are not coming near that orb, so he's got to use the orb. Let's have him, like, maybe he goes to pick it up, and like you said, like, when he first touched it, his hand kind of, like, it almost, like, indented, you know, like gelatinous. What if, like, when he goes to pick it up, it just kind of absorbs into him? So, like, what I'm picturing is, like, imagine picking up a water balloon, and it's, like, right about to pop, and then when it pops, like, just the water, like, rushes over you. Imagine if, like, when he picks it up, it, like, just kind of, like, melts over his arms. You just see this bright white light, like, kind of go over top of him and then, like, into him. And then, like, as soon as he does that, like, the zombies are just sitting there staring at him, but they're not, like, pointing at him anymore. Like, maybe they're not, like, reaching out toward him. And he, like, walks toward them, and they don't do anything. And then he walks right by them, and they turn to look at him, but they're not chasing him. Like, they're not following him. So clearly this, whatever this thing is that he just absorbed, it's helping him get away from the creatures. So I want to have, like, him realize, like, oh shit, this is safe. You know, like, let me get out of here. So what if, like, when that happens, when he uses the power pellet, let's just call it what it is. What if, okay, what if the maze walls, like, drop down and he can see everything? Like, he can see all the openings, you know, the walls open, and he can see, like a straight shot out. So he starts heading toward that. But what if the power pellet wears off and everything goes back up again?
Okay. So what I was thinking when you were talking about the power pellet is let's not have it wear off quite so fast. Like, I kind of feel like he finally found some way to fight back. Like, let's let him kind of fight back a little bit, whether this brings us all the way to the big climax or this is just, like, you know, the next chapter and we get there again. But yeah, I think that I see that, like, he's going to walk right past these guys. Would he just walk away, or maybe he would, like, stop and, like, you know, lift up his hand. He goes to maybe, like, touch one and it does nothing. But as soon as he touches it, what if you see that light shoot out of it, you know, like a spirit leaving the body, and then, like, the body falls. Like, oh fuck, he just quote unquote killed the zombie, but now this, like, ghost thing flew out of it. Again, it's Pac-Man, let's get some ghosts in there, you know. And so so he realizes he can stop these things. Maybe he's just, like, duck, duck, goose and, like, kills a couple of them. But then he just, you know, he's not going to go through the whole crowd. He's just like, okay, in his head, he's realizing, we're showing the audience. He starts walking. Yeah, as he's walking, the walls are coming down. And he ends up in what was this, like, huge central room. Not like where they were before, where, like, Blink's bag was. But now it's like this huge, huge room. Like, this room could not have fit in this maze. But, like, all the walls are coming down and it's, like, flat. And then maybe he starts yelling, like, Inksley, like, where are you? You know, and she hears some, we cut to her and she hears some, like, you know, vague voice coming. And so she starts, like, shooting her gun, like, to make noise. And he sees it and it's like, oh, cool. Like, we can finally, like, you know, get them back together. But then something bad has to happen in between. Like, what, maybe it's the ghosts or it's some other, you know, is there a mastermind of the maze? I'm not sure what yet.
I love this. Okay. So when he comes out of that, when he first walks out of the room, you know, and he notices, like, they're not doing anything. They're not, you know, they're not coming after him. You know, maybe he bumps into one. Maybe, like, when he's trying to, like, walk past them, and when he touches it, it does exactly what you said. Like, it convulses, the ghost, like, shoots out of it and it falls over. And he realizes that whatever this thing is that he touched, it gave him the power to stop these things. So maybe he turns and he, like, puts his hand on Clyde. Like, maybe he bumped into Blinky and that happened. Puts his hand on Clyde, and again, the ghost flies out of him, the corpse drops. And we see the ghosts, like, they fly away as the walls are coming down. They're flying towards something at the center of the maze. Because remember, in the game, when they get killed, the eyeballs go to the center of the maze and gets the body back.
Yep.
So they go to the center of the maze, and we see, like, a weird orb or something, like, in the center, like, up in the ceiling. Remember I said something was watching. Yeah. So like, yeah, the ghosts fly up there and he do it exactly what you said, where he's screaming out for Inksley. She fires her gun. He sees the gunfire in the distance as the walls are coming down. But as he's running across this like impossibly large room, you see like some kind of sphere or orb, like almost like a big glass, like security dome at the top of the ceiling. Okay. Like something is watching. And that's where the ghosts are flying to. Like they're flying up to there, and maybe as he's running, like the Namco One crew, like they're all looking. He's just like slapping them as he runs by him, like just fucking exercising ghosts, you know, nice. Just yeah. like a fucking televangelist preacher, just exercising them yeah. demons,
exactly,
just slapping the forehead, exactly. So he's running toward Inksley. And the ghosts are all like zooming up to the room. And maybe like when they're hitting the orb, we're hearing that weird breathy wind. So like something is breathing, like something is getting, and maybe it's getting louder, like something's getting pissed, right? So it's getting closer and closer to Inksley. And then out of nowhere, like let's have the either the power pellet run out or something happens where the walls start to slowly come back up. So he's almost to her. But like the walls start to come up and he's like jumping over the walls as they're like getting, you know, like they're still too low where he can climb over them. But eventually they're going to come up where he can't get around them and he has to try to run through the maze to get closer to her. So we have that, like all of that happening at once, like this cacophony of noise with, you know, the walls shifting, the breathing of the whatever the thing is, the ghosts flying, Nadia shooting. Like it's just fucking crazy. Right. So now do we want to have Puckman be the final girl? Because that's kind of where I'm heading.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it'd be funny if we kind of had Isley or Inksley come back like out of nowhere, you know, that sort of like jumping out of the shadows for like the final kill kind of a thing, you know, you see in movies. And we just did it with our Flapjack Massacre episode when we had Angus, you know, who we thought was dead, and he just comes back for like a final attack. You know, it'd be kind of cool to do that just to give her like one last like cool moment before, you know, she buys it. But yeah, I like this idea where it's like we were kind of getting to this climax and then we took it away, but I still think we should kind of keep the pace going. So yeah, the wall, it should be revealed that, or it should be obvious that the power pellet's power like faded away, like again, like it does in the game. And now the walls are back up, assuming there's Namco zombies, like, you know, in the maze somewhere. But at this point, Puckman just needs to be like, fuck this place. Like, I'm tired of these goddamn games, and he's not going to be running anymore. So he just starts going down hallways, but he's just like on a mission. He's just walking confidently, like he knows where he's going. And again, it's a weird like spiritual maze of like shit's moving and like fucking with people, but like maybe it's kind of receptive to your state of mind and like your thoughts, you know. And part of why Inksley was able to finally get through that wall was because, like, you know, she, I don't know, she wasn't paying attention, or the maze was trying on purpose to cut her off, you know, from Pinkerton, whatever. Right. So, you know, maybe because he's finally like walking with confidence, it's like he's not turning a whole lot of corners. So when he does, it's like he's just on a mission. And maybe at some point he sees a bunch of like Namco zombies like down this one hall. And instead of running for them, he just goes toward him, like fearlessly, like just goes towards them. Because I want him to find another power pellet. I'm trying to find some way for him to be like, fuck this place. Like, I'm in charge. I'm going to – somehow he's going to just stop being afraid, and that's going to, like, help him. The maze is going to – the maze itself is going to kind of, like, get out of his way. He's going to find another power pellet to bring the walls back down so he can go back to that central room and find out what the fuck that weird, like, ghost orb in the sky was. Like let's have a fight, you know?
Right. Okay. So, yeah. Let's I'm trying to think here if we want to end with that, because there's like a couple different ways we could go here, and I don't want us to kind of like do repeat. Mm-hmm. You know, in the sense of like we did the power pellet, it wore off, and get another power pellet. So I think like maybe we should, when he gets the power pellet, like that's when he goes toward the center of the room. So let's backtrack a bit. So does the thing, gets power pellet, kills the ghosts, or kills the zombies, the ghosts fly away, the walls come down, we see the orb, and maybe like Inksley is closer to the orb than Puckman is.
Okay.
Like when the walls come down, we see where she is, and, you know, she's firing, he starts running toward, and we do that whole sequence where the walls start coming up. Maybe the power pellet hasn't worn off. Maybe it's like he's still like glowing, but like whatever is controlling it and like got controlling the temple got control back and is like pulling the walls back up. Something where we can cut the two of them off again, and he's trying to make his way toward her. So now he's like confidently running through the halls. Any of the zombies, he's just fucking, like I said, slapping them, just sending the spirits. But maybe we should have Inksley face off against the big bad or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, like maybe like what she's trapped in, whatever the giant room was, like trapped inside the walls that Puckman is now trapped outside of because the walls went back up. And just, yeah, maybe she just goes at the sphere with whatever she has left in her, like whatever bullets she's got left, whatever, I don't know, knives. Like she's just like, fuck you, I'm going to throw everything I have left at this sphere that's maybe even like coming down and coming toward her with like ghosts all like flying all around it and like, you know, crazy directions, looking all creepy. Or maybe the ghosts are like flying more and more and more away from it, opening up its sort of orbit of like the ghosts like coming out of it more and more. And then now they're just like surrounding Inksley, but she just doesn't give a fuck at this point. So these ghosts are like flying around her. This orb is coming at her. We could just do the thing where it's like, we cut back to Puckman and he hears the scream and like, you know, she's gone because, you know, it's that horror movie thing where it's like we don't get to see the death, but obvious from the off screen, you know, blood curdling shriek that she she bought it in whatever terrible way, like whatever that sphere did to her. We're not sure yet. But now we have Puckman alone in the maze again. But we got to, do we want to have another like showdown? Do we get him back to that room somehow?
Yeah, no, I have it. I think I got it. Okay, so yeah, I love what you're talking about with the orb, especially the orb coming down toward her. So almost like the way I was picturing it when you were talking is like the spirits are circling around, almost like the spirits are moving it. It's like a ghost chariot, you know, like it's nice. Coming okay. down out of the like where it was up in the ceiling. It's coming down toward Puckman. She's fucking shooting the hell out of it. Bullets are bouncing off of it. She's just running through all of her fucking ammo. We're cutting back to like Puckman, you know, trying to make his way toward where he saw Inksley. He's running through the halls, fucking killing ghosts left and right. You know, more and more ghosts are joining the orb as he's doing that. What I'm thinking is like when the orb finally touches down, you know, like Inksley's still firing, like, and then click, 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 she's out of ammo. And, you know, maybe she like pulls a knife and is like, come on, you motherfucker, like ready for whatever it is, mm-hmm. you know, and the orb opens and we just see like that white light and like fog come out and we just see a cloaked figure. But like we get a little bit of a silhouette where we can see like there's some kind of like weird breathing apparatus on its face, you know, and it starts like making that sound. And
that's the breathing sound. Okay. Yeah.
Yes. And we cut to Puckman and we hear the scream that you had said. So we know whatever that thing was just got her. Right. So he fights his way. He's like making his way. Maybe he sees like the light. Cause remember when the orb opened, you saw this bright white light. So he sees like a glow coming from down the hall. So he's making his way there. He gets there and we see like, you know, Inksley's dead now. She's become one of them. She's like floating there next to this thing. And it's fucking Mesmeron from the Pac-Man cartoon. But the way I'm picturing it, cause he was the leader of the ghosts of the cartoon. Yeah. But the way I'm picturing it is like, imagine if he was like picture 80s aliens, like not the movie Aliens, but 80s alien, like sci-fi creatures. They're always like very spindly and it's usually a puppet, you know, some kind of like puppeteer work. So imagine this like greenish, like skeletal creature with like this breathing apparatus over its mouth, this long like cloak around it and these long spindly fingers and just like ghosts all over him. But when Puckman comes in the room and he still has the power of the power pellet, like maybe it just like looks at him and it starts like breathing rapidly and he comes at him like trying to fight, but maybe it doesn't fight back. So he goes, he's like killing the ghosts left and right. And then he grabs it and it just like looks at, and you can almost see in its eyes, like it looks thankful. And it dies. The orb closes around Puckman and raises up into the sky. And now he takes the place of the fucking Mesmeron that was there. He's now trapped in the temple as the guardian, the watcher of the fucking temple. So of course, because it's Pac-Man is in a fucking orb. Like, of course, it makes sense.
Yeah, that. Yeah, exactly. We've taken this like human figure and turned him into like a big circle, you know, like fucking Pac-Man. And and maybe for whatever, for reasons we do not have to explain, because we are not explaining fucking anything, like the orb turns from that white light to yellow light.
Yes, of course. And it floats back up into the ceiling, you know, and you see the ghosts, you know, and it goes silent again. Like the movie goes silent, and we pan slowly out of the maze back out to the doorway, and we just see like the big, you know, black obelisk, and the screen goes black, and then we start to get the credits. And I think, like, end credit scene, we should totally have, like, we go back to, like, you know, NASA or whatever, the human expedition that sent it out, have them talking about, like, you know, the Black Bandai has gone radio silent, just like the Namco one. Like, we're going to need to send another crew in. And like, kind of, like, set up for a fucking sequel. Like, the over-the-credits, like, narration that, yes, people were waiting to hear back from them, and when they went missing, we got to know why. So we have a chance at a sequel.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. Wait. I love this, right? So, yeah, we do this, like, over the credits or end credits sequence where, yeah, just like you said, like, we got to send in another crew. And it's like, you mentioned NASA, but, like, it should be these, like, grizzled space fleet guys, like, space navy guys, you know?
Right, right.
And you have the one guy, you know, who's, like, the, you know, the commander or whatever. He says, we got to send in another crew. And he turns, the admiral or whatever, like, strolls onto the bridge. And he, you know, the commander tells him, like, we got to call in another crew. And the admiral, like, lights his cigar and is like, I'll call his wife.
Oh my god,
Pac-Man.
That's perfect, dude. That's fucking perfect. Oh my god, I love it. This went in some crazy directions that I was not expecting it to, but I liked it. That was fun.
Yeah, it was definitely fun. We definitely ran into that issue that happens sometimes where it's like we're kind of running around in circles trying to have fun with it and not like rush to the end, you know? Yeah. And kind of, you know, but at the same time, I think it's cool that people get to hear our thought process too of like, okay, we tried something that didn't work, rewind the movie, cut that scene out, try something different. Like sometimes that's the way it happens with a story. Like you've got to follow a trail, but just like our characters, like you hit a dead end, you're like, okay, we'll double back and try a different way, you know?
Right. And that's anyone who has ever written a story knows that that's why there's first, second, third drafts, you know, where it's like, you know, you do something and you think about it and you're like, yeah, that didn't work as well as I had hoped. Let me try something different. You know? So yeah, that's one of the things I love about this podcast is because it is just raw storytelling, you know, from the concept to completion, at least a first rough draft of completion. But like, it is fun because there is that creative process there of like, well, how do we get to where we want to go? And sometimes shit takes a different turn. Like I did not plan on Puckman becoming the new, like, you know, watcher of the maze. That was not at all in my head until you had made the comment about, you know, him, like we were talking off the air and you're like, well, what if he doesn't live? Like, what if he doesn't get away? And I'm like, oh,
yeah,
wait a second.
Well, yeah, because that was the one idea I had. And just peeling the curtain back for a second, like we had to take a quick break. And, you know, when it was like, okay, like, where were we? And I was thinking after going through the first, you know, portion of the movie, I was like, okay, like, where are we going now? So what I was thinking in my head was, okay, this is where I want to go in the games. Pac-Man never gets out of the maze. It's like right. An endless game until you get to that famous kill screen at the end of Pac-Man, which, you know, if you're not familiar with it, the game was programmed to have 255 levels, which is equivalent to the max capacity of the code that they used to design the game. So if you were ever able to get to level 256, well, in binary language, 256 overflows back to zero. So the game tries to reset itself and you get this like weird garbled gibberish screen that's like the game becomes unplayable at that point. So that's like that's right. The kill screen. And, you know, so yes, there really is an end, you know, to Pac-Man. But the point is, I didn't think Pac-Man would ever leave the maze. So I was thinking this would be some sick, twisted ending where we have Puckman, you know, defeat whatever bad guy we were going to put him up against. And I was not expecting Mesmeron, but, you know, we have him defeat this big bad, and then he thinks that everything's fine, except he's still trapped in the maze. And it's like we right. end the movie with him wandering aimlessly forever or until he dies in this maze, and we just pan out and leave him there. Like, fuck, that's dark, but that's yep. where I thought we were going. So when you started talking about whatever this big bad was, I was assuming some kind of like ghost lord or alien or something. We'll pick maybe one of the characters from one of the cartoons, like betray us. But I was not expecting Puckman to become the sphere and to become Pac-Man, the yellow Pac-Man. I'm like, oh, that's yep. so perfect the way that worked out.
And that's the thing. That's what I love about this show is there's so many times where we have like a seed of an idea, and through talking, like we go in an area that I was like, oh shit, I didn't think of that at all, like until just that moment. Because the whole time we were talking, I did not plan anything with a sphere at all. There was nothing like that. But then when you started mentioning like I think I mentioned the security dome like up on the ceiling, and you mentioned like coming down, like floating around, I was like, oh wait a second, that's like Pac-Man. It's a big orb.
This was cool. Like, there were so many things that kind of came out of nowhere. Like, I love the idea that we had, like, the maze be, like, dead silent and yes. the walls moving. Like, there was just cool stuff like that. And I really like these zombies because they're like zombies, but really they're like possessed by these ghosts. And yes. But I also really like that we don't really explain anything. I'm the kind of fan that really enjoys that. Like, I don't want you to spoon feed me every explanation to every tiny thing. Like, I want sequels, or at the very least, I want something to think about when the movie's over. Like, take the movie with me. I'm gonna noodle it. I'm gonna like spin it around in my head thinking, oh, what about this and what was that? And, you know, of course, in this day and age, it would be just so much YouTube and social media fodder of people, you know, trying to figure out what happened and what was the secret of this. And you'd have all these stupid YouTube videos of people like, you know, the real secret of Pac-Man the movie, like, you know.
And no, you're 100% right. Like, that's and I love that as well. Like, I love the question, especially when it comes to science fiction and horror, because, you know, like sometimes I do want to know all the answers, especially when it's something where it's more critical to the plot. Like, you know, when you are constantly questioning through the movie and they don't tell you anything, that's fucking annoying. But when it's something like, okay, like I love the way Romero always handled the whole zombie thing. Like, what caused the zombie outbreak? Who knows? Was it space dust? Maybe. You know, it's like, what is it? We never find out, and I'm fine with that. I definitely like those types of lack of explanations in horror movies. But then, like, with stuff like possession movies or things where they make a big deal about the rules, if you don't follow your own rules, I get annoyed, you know? So, but like this, they're on an alien planet. Everything is questioning, like, what is it? We don't know. And like, they don't know. The characters don't know.
It's more interesting than if you had just told me, oh, there's this, like, you know, there was this alien who, like, built this giant temple to betray us, Lord of the Ghosts. But, you know, the ghosts turned on him and trapped him in there, and he had to stay there until, you know, he could betray the next person. And I'm like, that, you just, like, you took what was cool and creepy and atmospheric and eerie, and you just told me this dumb story about ancient aliens. And I was like,
right.
You kind of like take the wind out of it for me. You know, I mean, yeah, you could make that creepy, but it's like, if you really tried to explain what we just did, turning this guy into Pac-Man, like, I'd rather just leave it like unspoken and like let people figure it out, you know?
Oh yeah, abso-fucking-lutely. But yeah. No, I think it was a success.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I don't want to go on and on about it, but I like your comment about, like, if you're going to put rules to some kind of mythology or cosmology into a story, you have to make good on that promise. You know, if you're going to set the rules up, then you have to follow through with your own rules. Because when I read a story or watch a movie, if I'm given a set of rules, how I interpret that is, okay, these are the clues. It's like a whodunit, right? You're going to explain who the actors are, where the, what the setting is, what was going on. You're going to put all of these criteria in place, but there are also limitations. You know, there's only so many people. It only happened that one night. It was only in this building. And you give people enough information that they could potentially figure out the ending of the story. And then the writer's trick is to let the reader think they've figured it out, but I have a twist. But the twist has to follow the rules too. The twist has to be,
yes,
you didn't think about this, like this way to interpret the rules. Like, you know, it was like a trick question or a trick phrasing or whatever. And that's the best kind of story, because the readers are involved in trying to be smarty pants and predict the ending. And then you pull the rug out from under them. But everyone loves it because, well, I followed the rules, you know. And
yep.
But on the flip side, if you want to just have something that's like wild and weird and bizarre, that's cool too. But don't give me any rules. I don't want any rules, nothing. Because if you start giving us rules, I'm going to start calling you on your bullshit because you're making promises and not following through. So either give me the rules or shut the fuck up and just creep me out, you know?
Right. And that's 100% my view on that type of horror. Because one of my biggest complaints about a lot of horror movies is when your antagonist is human and he does inhuman things. Like, for example, I've bitched about this 1,000 times, including on the Boogeyman's Closet, where we covered this movie, but the fucking Strangers. I hate that movie with the burning passion of 1,000 suns. Like, I don't understand how it ever became as popular as it did, because they show you these people are people. They're human. They're just crazy, normal folk. Like, that's the scary part, that they're supposedly just everyday people and they decided to go on this killing spree. But they have them do supernatural things throughout the entire movie. Like, there is a scene where the one of the main characters is walking down a hallway, you know, like scared, like what's coming around the hallway. There's no doors behind him. It's just a long open hallway. And you see one of the killers walking up directly behind him. And then he turns and the killer's gone. Where did he go? Where did he disappear to? Where is he hiding? Like, is he Spider-Manning up on the ceiling? What the fuck? Like, that shit pisses me off to no end. Because if you're going to establish that these are normal people, don't have them do supernatural things. Now, if it's Freddy or Jason, fine. Fuck around. I don't care. We've established they're supernatural. But if it's, like, Leatherface, no. He's a guy. Like, he's a guy with a saw. Stop making him do inhuman things. This is why I got so pissed off at the Texas Chainsaw remake, where they fucking severed his arm with a meat cleaver at the bicep, and then he was just fine. Like, he was still using his chainsaw. How did he start it? With his fucking teeth? Like, it just, it pisses me off.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's like, again, we got to wrap this up, but, like, I think that's why a lot of people didn't like Jason Goes to Hell, because you had a character that was just kind of hand wavy. He existed. Like, yeah, he was a killer and he came back from the dead. We don't know how. We don't know how he survived the drowning. They never explained it. Like, fine. But then Jason Goes to Hell and Jason X come out, and it's like demonic possession thing. It's like the legacy of the Voorhees family. And then he has a healing factor. And it's like, okay, that's fine for like the 9th and 10th installments in a story. But like, don't set all that shit up at the beginning, because you also then start to paint yourself into a corner. If you have too many rules and you don't follow through on it, or you don't know how to follow through on it, it just becomes like this big old fucking mess, you know?
Exactly.
And then, like, on the flip side of that is you get someone like the author Brandon Sanderson, who puts out a fantasy series where he creates so many intricate, like, scientific rules for how his magic system works that you can make all these predictions, and yet he'll still find ways to, like, surprise you. Like, the reason I bring it up now is because, like, in the Mistborn series, it's this magic system based on metal and how it interacts with the human bodies in this world. And I'm not going to explain it right now, but he's like, he has said that he has a third series planned. He's done two so far in like different time periods in this world. He's like, this next series is going to be in the future, and there's going to be spaceships and faster than light travel, and it's all going to follow the rules, and you could figure it out if you were paying attention. And I'm like, that's fucking cool. I want to know how you're going to use metal to like go faster than light and somehow in the books, like, he's set the rules up where it's like, if you follow, you know, A to B to C, you'll get there. And I'm like, I believe him because he's proven it so many times that he makes his rules really, really work.
Right. That's fucking cool.
But anyway, let's wrap this up. This was a crazy idea. I, as I said at the beginning, was not expecting this to be easy or really even any good, or maybe not even like worth the time to bother with Pac-Man. But I am super happy that we decided to dust this one off and go for it anyway, because this was a ton of fun.
Right. I agree. Dude, I'm right there with you, because I definitely wanted to do this last year when we first talked about it, but I wasn't sure what we were going to fucking do. I just knew, I was like, oh yeah, those ones where we have to completely fabricate a story based on a simple game is usually pretty fun. Like, we had fun with, you know, Monopoly and Snakes and Ladders and all the board games we've done. But like, and Centipede, I had a lot, like I mentioned at the start of the show, Centipede was a lot of fun. So I was definitely looking at our list of ideas. I shouldn't say list of ideas, list of properties that we've written down, like, you know, and Pac-Man just kept jumping out at me. So I'm glad we finally gave this one a shot. And who knows, maybe we'll do another one of these in the future. Maybe we'll tackle Galaga or something.
I know, right? Let's do Joust.
Oh, dude, I love Joust.
Actually, now that I said that out loud, I'm like, oh, fuck, that's actually a really good idea.
We need to Joust. That could make for a fun fantasy movie.
I think so. I'm going to have to put it on the list right now. But in the meantime, we appreciate everyone for tuning in to the Raised by Rentals program. You can find more about us online at raisedbyrentals.com and at raisedbyrentals on most of the socials. Screw X. We also belong to the Rad Pantheon, a super team up of podcasters, artists, musicians, a whole art collective of creative friends supporting each other to spread the word about rad stuff. If you like this show, there's a great chance that you'll dig one or maybe all of the other projects in the Rad Pantheon. So check out radpantheon.com and at Rad Pantheon on the social media. Mike, you are in several of those Rad Pantheon projects. So what do you have coming up?
Well, the Boogeyman's Closet is, we are winding down to our break. We have one more episode that was supposed to, I mean, a lot of these episodes were supposed to come out in February, but COVID's a bitch and kind of threw everything out of order. But we have our Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2022 episode coming. And then we have a couple of Patreon specials that will be happening between now and July, which we're hoping to come back in July. But we will be taking a break. So Boogeyman's Closet, there's almost 300 episodes at this point, so there's plenty to listen to. And then, of course, Count Creepyhead's Saturday Morning Monster Mash. There's definitely some fun stuff planned for that. And, yeah, I know I've talked about it multiple times, but Member Berries and Munchies, that is coming soon. Yeah, a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Once again, I appreciate everyone for tuning in and sticking around, especially on these long episodes. So in the meantime, until the next one, visit us on the socials, drop us a line, leave a comment, leave a podcast rating. Let us know what you think we should improve next time. And with that, I'm Josh.
I'm Mike.
And we have to return some videotapes.
We got to get a sock full of quarters. 'Cause I got Pac-Man fever.
Shit, here comes Pac-Man.
Hey, Pac-Man, what's up?
Me, you bitches, I'm high on crack. Want a free base?
No, Pac-Man, drugs are bad.
Nope, can't help you, man.